Welcome to a York Hospital Ball special with York City owner Matt Oogler, speaking exclusively to York Hospital Ball, reviewing the epic season finale, as well as looking back at the whole memorable campaign. Matt gives us the inside track on recruitment and retention, as well as an insight into future plans now that York City are back in the Football League. These episodes are on behalf of York Hospital Radio, a local charity who have provided a service for patients in York Hospital for over 60 years. At the end of the episode, you will hear how you can donate to the charity, and by doing so, give yourself a chance to win a signed shirt by Mark Kitching. But for now, without further delay, here is Matt Oogler talking to Dan Tate on York Hospital Ball.
So Matt, thank you again for joining us on York Hospital Radio. It's always a pleasure to sit down and speak with you. And congratulations for achieving promotion to the back to the Football League. It's been a long but incredible season. I just thought, first question, just sum up, if you can, your emotion of the last few days.
Oh, from which part? Like from the when Rochdale's goal went in, or all of it?
All of it, yeah. And then build up to the Rochdale and then
York's run. I think the week before, there's not much you can do at that point. It's like everything's ready to go. So it was a very long week. Like, time seemed to be going really slowly. I wasn't sleeping well because you're running through all the different possibilities in your head. The night before the game, I didn't sleep at all. And then, yeah, just obviously sat down to watch the game, and I don't even know what happened there. Absolutely insane.
And where did you watch it? Did you watch it at home then?
Yeah, I watched it with my friends. It was carnage. I've never had that range of emotions in such a short space of time, but I think we deserve to win the game on the balance of it. I think Joe Gray has a really good chance. Stonesy goes through one-on-one. Other than their header, I don't really think they had much of a sniff, so I think they've done fantastic, Rochdale, and it's painful being on that. I mean, it's not quite the same as us last year. It's magnified massively, but I remember that feeling of, you know, falling short, and it must sting, and I'm just glad we're not on the end of that.
How did you react when Rochdale did score? Because like you say, I'm with you, they were very enthusiastic, very energetic, they sort of huffed and puffed, but you felt like Harrison wasn't having any shots to save, and then that ball in from Henderson, it was almost like as soon as he'd crossed that in, you sort of knew we were in trouble, and then it went in. And
yeah.
No, how were you feeling at that point?
I think there was like I don't want to be rude or whatever. So I think we're a better football team than Rochdale, but there was something that just kept going. Like, you saw it last week, you've seen it a few times over the course of the season where they just, no matter what, they got it done. And the longer that game went on at 0-0, I just started thinking, maybe is it just written in the stars? And then when that goal went in, I thought, that's it. It's, you know, some things are just meant to be. And then winning the title was just, that's what it's meant to be. And I think my head kind of immediately started turning towards the players and going, okay, right, how do we pick these, you know, the staff up, the players up, and you know, go again? Because I still think we would have a very good chance there. But it's a real hammer blow to lose a league title like that.
Yeah. And then conversely, what was your emotions when the game restarted? Because us in the ground, we didn't know how much time was being added on. We didn't, you know, I suppose watching it at home, you'll have seen that there was a little bit of time left, and we always score, don't we? So was there still some hope there for you?
There was always hope, I think, and this is where I think we made massive strides last summer compared to the team from last year's. I think that firstly, the boys who were here last year, who went through what we went through with Oldham, and the title race with Barnet, I think they obviously had learnt a lot. But also just having those players in that dressing room and around the team who have been there, done it. Probably none of them have ever done what happened on Saturday. I don't think anyone ever will do that again. But the mentality was there. I didn't think it was over. I thought it's unlikely, but they're not going to capitulate here. Let's see what happens. And yeah, when it came, I mean, to be honest with you, I've watched it back a few times, and I got to credit Joe Gray for the composure. Was he 22 years old? The composure of him to, I think most people, when he picks the ball up, they're probably shooting or, you know, panicking, or he takes it and slots in Josh, and, you know, comes back out to Ryan, and Ryan again, I think again, most people probably smash that across the face of the goal, and he's picked out Callum at the back post, and it fell to Josh, and you know, the rest is history.
Yeah, it was an incredible moment, wasn't it? And it still sort of feels surreal a little bit looking at it a few days on, doesn't it?
It's mental and it's everywhere. There's no escaping it. So I'm just really happy we're on the right side of that, and I think we deserve it over the course of 46 games. Commiserations to Rochdale, and I think if there's any justice, they'll come up in the playoffs. But listen, I'm just buzzing that we're out.
Yeah. And what was your overriding sort of feeling when that full-time whistle went? Was it relief? Was it elation? How were you feeling?
I feel like since almost last year, even towards the end of last year, I felt almost like a weight or a pressure. Just, I think the biggest part of this project was always going to be getting out of this division. And it's relentless. You can't really slip up much in this division. Like, you can't. You can't have a bad spell. Like, you look at Bournemouth and Scunthorpe and Carlisle, like, they all have had very good seasons, but probably each of them have had a little spell where they wobbled, and they're straight out of the title race. So my feeling was just such relief that we could get it done, and I didn't want another year here. I didn't want it at all. Like, I feel like after last year I'd picked myself up pretty well and, you know, made some tough decisions and got the recruitment pretty spot on, and I just thought, I don't know if my heart can take another year of this. Obviously, I would have done it, but I just feel, since that day, I've felt like a weight's been lifted, and feel light and very happy. I've been sleeping well, and my voice is a little bit husky, but I'm just, it was the best day of my life so far, and I've got kids, so it's a big thing to say, but I've never felt like that before in my life.
Yeah, they're probably unlikely to listen to this, so we'll probably be all right.
No, I'll make them listen when they're older, just so they know.
and I thought you allowing people like Steve, who's here with us today, and Michael Miles as well, to have their sort of moments with a trophy and singing songs in the streets with the supporters, it all sort of showed to me how close the fan base is now. It was fractured for some time before you guys came in, and promotion's a huge achievement, but bringing everyone together isn't an easy thing to do. So you must feel immensely proud to have sort of harnessed that community in your time here.
Yeah, I think there's two parts to that. I think people such as Steve and Michael and yourself, I think, you know, it's easy to forget where we come from here. Is I often go back to that night in Altrincham, and where I genuinely just thought, I don't know what I'm doing here. I've got no clue. I'm a failure. I've failed. I've let everyone down. And it was people like them that sort of, and you of course, who talked me kind of through that and made me feel like, you know what, it's okay, you're going to get it right. You've got to just trust your belief, trust what you're doing. I know that trust the process has been doing the rounds a little bit, and I felt like that period of time I'd fallen off the horse completely, and just don't know, without those type of people I would have had the sort of, you know, courage, I guess, to stand up and try and fix what's happened. So I always have time for them, and they're as much a part of the success as anyone else, in my opinion. And then with the other, you know, the general fans, I think, I don't know, I think that it helps. Obviously, we're a good football side, people like that, so that brings people together. But I do think that maybe we're a little bit different to other ownership groups and, you know, executives out there. And listen, I know there's a lot of people that don't like me for it, and that's fine. I think at the point, so you guys probably realise it doesn't bother me too much. But I feel like I'm relatable, and I feel like, yes, I own the club, and yes, I make a lot of big decisions, but ultimately I'm a fan of football, and York's my team. I love them and I support them, and I think maybe that plays its part. I think hopefully the fans at this point know that we care about them and have their best interests at heart. Maybe they don't see everything that's going on behind the scenes, so sometimes some decisions might look a little bit funny. But for me, the fans will always be the most important. You know, that and the players, to me, are by far the most important groups. And yeah, I'm just happy for everyone involved, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I felt it was kind of redemption for Josh Stones after Oldham last season, him getting that goal, you know, the equaliser, the one that got us to the Football League. You've always had incredible belief in Josh, I think, as a signing, and always had his back. So you must be really pleased for him, you know, to compare it to how the season ended a year ago and the sort of level of abuse he got. I feel like it's a bit of a redemption story for him.
Yeah, Josh and I's stories are intertwined quite heavily. I've always backed him. I think he's we've got a very good relationship, almost, you know, a friendship. And I'll tell you, you know, a funny bit that no one knows from this season was, even when sort of Stuart had come in and he wasn't picking him straight off the bat, and I don't do it often, but I went into his office and just said, look, and basically put a bluff on the table, went, either you start playing the boy or I'm going to loan him to Hartlepool because you're killing his value, it's not working. And then that was actually like a day or two before Barnsley. So when he scored that goal against Barnsley, obviously his goal against Rochdale was my favourite moment, but that was a very close second. I felt really proud and sort of vindicated that, you know, everyone knows he came in with a big price tag, and what a player, just what a human being, what a player. I feel like I had to kick the door down to get him out there, but I always knew what he could do. Like, it was like last season when Ollie was injured and, oh, sorry, he was suspended, and Josh had played against Woking, scored a hat trick, and then he's dropped for the next game. Like, that's unheard of. So I don't think Josh had a fair swing of things until it was made quite clear that he needs to have a fair swing of things. And listen, I'd be the first to hold my hands up if he had 10, 15 games and it just wasn't really working. At that point, you go, okay, well, maybe we made a bad decision here and we have to move on. But I never, never, ever, ever thought that if you put Josh Stones in that team, that he's ever coming out again. He's that good. I think the limit for him is massive. I know he loves the football club and wants to stay here, and we're working on that to make it a really sort of long-term thing. But yeah, I can't speak highly enough about him, and yeah, got a lot of love for him.
Yeah, and I think people in America have as well after his interviews today.
I didn't actually see that one, but I saw the first one and it made me laugh. But he's just authentic, isn't he? He's just himself, which I think that was probably why me and him get along quite well, I'd say.
Yeah, and 3 years ago, I was absolutely privileged to be probably the first York-based media to speak to you. Mm-hmm. When we sort of look back to that time, how different was the journey to the Football League than what you expected?
I still always say that first year was the most important year. I think we made so many mistakes, but I think if it had sort of been, you know, mid-table finish, maybe a playoff finish here, like a little bit of success but nothing crazy, would we have learned much? Probably not. I think we had to really go through the fire to sort of learn what it takes to succeed. Firstly, in the National League in football, in sport, I guess. So I did think when I first came to the football club it would be easier than it has been. But I think anyone who's willing to hold their hands up and learn a lesson and not always think that they have to make every decision correctly, I think they can succeed, and I think that I'm proof of that. I think maybe after that first year a lot of people maybe considered me a bit of a joke. I'm sure people still do now some. But the one thing they can't take away is I built a team that's champions. So, you know, second most points ever in National League history, fastest to 100 guy. I mean, the records go on and on and on. And there's a misconception. Listen, we've spent money 100%, but there's a misconception that we are the big hitters in this division. Don't get me wrong, we've played a part. But if you're going by wage bill, there's two very obvious teams that are ahead of us and quite substantially ahead of us. I think where we have spent money, we've bought assets. You talk about Josh Stones. I bought Josh Stones for, I won't reveal the amount, but X amount of money. I could get on the phone tonight and I'd sell him for triple that tomorrow. Malachi Fagan-Walcott, we spent, you know, X amount of money. I could get on the phone tomorrow, sell them for quadruple that amount of money. So yes, we have spent money, but not stupidly. I think we spent it wisely and we've brought in assets and young players that are hungry and that maybe haven't had a sniff somewhere else. And, you know, I think the value of our squad has gone up substantially. I think, again, Alex Hunt's another one, you know, brought in for very little and now worth a hell of a lot of money. Ollie Pierce is another one brought in for free. But I look at that team and think, if there was a fire sale tomorrow, which I promise you there won't be, every bit we've invested, we're getting straight back out. So yeah, I think we've done a good job.
Yeah, it's funny because that's one of my questions later on. I was going to say that I feel like there's a bit of a naive sort of narrative about the sort of spending of York City, and it's not necessarily about the money, it's about the type of player you're getting in. And I think personalities is very important to you, and you mentioned there Josh, but you know, because you're kind of one or two bad eggs in any football club from ruining what you've kind of built, whereas you kind of get the right players that are going to fit into the rest of the team.
I think, I don't know if it's a secret or not a secret at this point at York, but I think, you know, the recruitment's all done by the club, it's not done by management staff or anyone like that. It's and I've been open with you about that for a long time, that, you know, I have a vision and a DNA for what I want this football club to look like. I surround myself with people that follow that system. And with principles about not that first, the first year, I tell you what, we were just machine gunning before signing anyone that got offered our way. But since then, and especially last summer, you know, there's a very strict criteria that a player will have to meet before they're allowed to be a York City player. Loan players are a little bit different. You're happy to take a more of a punt on it because it's low risk. But permanent signing, especially multi-year deals, you know, you've got to make sure you get it right. And I think you look at the business we've done last summer, and I think we did get it very right.
Yeah, I'm going to mention about recruitment very shortly. But what does it mean to you to get us back in the Football League? Because I think for many of us, and particularly like me and Steve, we grew up watching our football club in the Football League. This is obviously almost new territory for you, isn't it? So what does it mean for you personally, and also second to that, what does it mean logistically for the football club? Like what can you do now to sort of grow that's different to if you're in non-league?
So I think on a personal level, I think compared to you guys, I didn't go through the hard, I went through one bit of a hard time, but other than that, I didn't go through the years and years of hard times that I've heard about. So I don't think I can relate as much on that. I mean, what I can say for myself is, you know, I'm extremely proud of myself. I'm extremely proud of everyone who works with us. I'm 32 and I think it's probably, yeah, the greatest achievement of my life so far. And yeah, I'm immensely proud. I've had so much self-doubt about it for a long time and, you know, a lot of abuse and all that. And I bring it on myself, I know that, and that's fine. But to just almost stick a middle finger up at them all and go, yeah, all right, say what you want. I'm a champion. That's it. Like, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on here, but
you can do what you want.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
And logistically then, does it allow, I was thinking like the academy, it must, there's difference in funding, yeah, and things like that, isn't there?
There's big changes. I'm not going to lie to you. We're probably a little bit behind on where we need to be with that. It's so difficult when you don't know what division you're going to be in. You can start trying to plan for things, but until now it's kind of full steam ahead. So I think, you know, everyone thinks that we're off now for the summer and it's all just happy days. But I know there's a lot that needs to take place logistically, but we'll be fine. We've got the right people for it.
Yeah. And let's take a look at the season as a whole. I thought going back to the sort of start and looking at recruitment, I think it's fair to say that you were much more at the forefront of the signings coming through the door last year than the previous two seasons. And you already had like Ollie Banks in the stands for the Oldham game. So was sort of he, Mark Kitchen, Hiram Boateng, who've all had big influences on this team throughout the season, was that a conscious effort to have more sort of experience and more leaders? Is that what you felt was lacking?
Yeah, I think there's two reasons for it. I think the first one is we look at a lot of data, and you know, a lot of the stuff that we were lacking last year, I think you could probably put it down to either lack of physicality or lack of maturity. But then from like a very personal standpoint, I remember that night at Barnet and just thinking, what are these lot doing? Like they're so much better than this. What are they doing? And I just had, at that point, it started to tweak to me that I think they're shitting themselves here, basically. And I think any time we got a little bit closer to Barnet, we'd have a slip up again. And it wasn't until Barnet had obviously, you know, not mathematically, but they'd obviously won the league, that we started really playing well again. And then that night against Oldham, it was like, it was glaring. Because Oldham, they're a physical football side. They're not a good football side. I don't know what they're like this year. I haven't watched them at all. But the team from last year, I don't know if I'd take, obviously, other than Kitchen, I don't think there's any of them that I would take in our side. But it was men versus boys that night. And it was very clear. And I think that kind of was the cherry on the top where I realised, we need winners here. Yeah, Banks, obviously, is a serial winner, and I know him personally before he signed, and he's, you know, the way he is as a person, I knew this guy's going to just really, really give us a boost. So I remember I signed him, yeah, basically straight after that game against Oldham, and I came in, I think, the next day or the day after, and the manager was fuming that we'd signed him, and I was thinking, what the fuck is this guy talking about? He thought he was a midfield destroyer, and I was like, oh my goodness. So at that point, it really again firmed into my mind that, yes, someone might be tactically very, very good and they might coach very, very well, but they don't know what players are out there, what players' roles are, things like that. Because to think that Ollie Banks is a midfield destroyer, I mean, you've seen him this season. He's a poet on the pitch. So that was, yeah, that was an interesting conversation. But I just thought, I'm not going for another season of this. Like, we're going to get promoted. And I don't believe in this group of staff I believed in them in terms of the coaching and their tactics, but I think in terms of recruitment, I didn't believe in them. And I'd spoken to a lot of people at, you know, some clubs higher up the pyramid, and they had told me how it was run there, and you know, did a lot of learning and spent some time with different people. And yeah, I had my convictions that it might cause an issue, but ultimately I'm going to do what I think is right for the football club, and I'm going to spearhead that.
With the Oldham game, it was a massive disappointment, wasn't it, at the time, but I always felt like you were on the front foot straight after it, like you weren't moping around. And I wondered whether, was that something that you've always had that mentality wise, or is that sort of stemmed from you having to deal with things like the Altrincham defeat where you've had to learn to bounce back?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Thank you.
I think the more I've been involved in this game and the more I started to learn and understand, you start to kind of get a sense of what needs to be done. I realised pretty quick it's not rocket science what we need here. We need to improve in this area, this area and this area. Fair play to the coaching staff for doing a great job this year, but every player you're suggesting is, you know, from the league below, who's 5'4" and... yeah, they're technically very good, but we don't need that. We need men. So to me, it was clear that what was needed. I think, again, I've kind of got that attitude of, I'm going to show you. I think that's just built into me. Obviously, look, I gave it out massively to Oldham that year, so I deservedly took it. But, you know, I was coming back swinging for sure, and I think I had to go quiet and let the work do the talking, and now we're back on a level playing field. So
we're coming from...
So I heard someone say that, yeah.
And I know they're kind of all pieces in the jigsaw out of the signings, but was there any signing in particular that you made that when you did get it over the line, you thought, oh, this is a big moment, this is going to make a huge difference to us going forward?
I think the Hiram one, I think it was so close to not happening. He was had his bags packed and ready to go to another club, you know, the following morning. I called him up and we spoke for, I guess, an hour, 2 hours. And I told him, you know, what we're trying to do. And, you know, it was kind of like a Hail Mary to try and get him to come. And then kind of within 10, 15 minutes of that phone call, I got a message from his agent saying, yeah, he really enjoyed talking to you. And, yeah, he's going to tell the other club that thanks, but no thanks. And, yeah, he'll come up to York and sign. And I just obviously had watched a lot of him, saw a lot of his data, knew a lot about his character, and just thought this is a top player to get, and it's going to really add that steel and anchor that midfield, which I think we probably were missing a little bit last year.
Yeah, and I thought he was tremendous.
I think he's an unsung hero. I think like, obviously people will focus on Pierce's goals and Banks's assists and stuff like that, and obviously both fantastic players, but someone like Hiram goes a bit more under the radar. But I think without him in that midfield, we're not champions. So yeah, massive signing. I think Kitch as well. Kitch has surpassed my expectations, to be honest with you. I knew he was going to be a good player, but he's been phenomenal. So yeah, but Boateng was the one where I thought, this is a big one.
Big moment, yeah. And when we sat down last time on the podcast, I think it was fair to say that it had been a tense summer between you and Adam, and you've outlined the reasons there quite eloquently, and you parted ways quite early on in the season. So I won't go over old ground, but Stuart Maynard came in. I just wondered sort of why him in particular. It was felt like quite a quick move at the time, and I was looking back at some of the comments that people had made when it was made as if it was like a rash decision. But because of how successful he's become and he's been, it clearly wasn't just a rash decision. So what was it about Stuart that made you think that he's the right person to take this group of players on that you've put together?
I think people think decisions are rushed because they're not part of the process. So maybe you had thought, you know, I'd woken up one morning and gone, okay, Adam, you're done, and who can I get in? And I just spun a wheel and Stuart Maynard came up. That's not the case at all. Even now, you have to prepare for any situation. So I have a list of 5-6 managers that if Stuart was to go tomorrow, I know exactly who I'd want to come in. And that's not, you know, anything other than just being prepared. So I don't think it was rushed at all. I think Stuart and I had conversed a number of times. I think, again, being on the ground and really being close with the players and you know, the staff at the club, you can kind of see, you know, the like dynamics of how the group works. And my view was, I didn't think that Adam's management style was working anymore. I think he, what's the word? Loud and critical, and you know, I think you'd be fearful of making a mistake probably. And I think in the way we want to play as a football club, you have to let the players make mistakes. It's going to happen because we want to take risks and play that type of football, and that's always going to be the way as long as I'm here. Stuart, for me, you know, Notts County being a possession-based team made a lot of sense. I think he did well there getting them into the playoffs. I think, I don't know the reasoning behind why he was let go, but, you know, probably a bit harshly let go. But I knew as a man that he was more of an arm around the shoulder type of guy. And I think knowing the group, how I knew them, that's what they needed. I also think if you took the management style of Hinchwood to players like Hiram and Banks and Palmers, who had been there, done it, achieved so much, it's not going to work. You kind of have to let them almost manage themselves because they've been in the game so long and achieved so much. So that for me was the big reason. I think, and I've said it to a lot of people, I don't think it took a rocket scientist to come in here and fix our problems. I think if you look at the squad we have, it's arguably, if not the best, one of the best that's ever been assembled in this division. And they just needed a leader who was, you know, going to nurture that group and let them do what they needed to do. And obviously there's a structure to it and tactics and stuff behind it. But we finished on 96 points last year. We finished on 108 this year. But you add, so from 96 points, you've added Mark Kitchen, Hiram Boateng, you know, Zach Johnson, who's been fantastic. Josh Stones has come into the fold. Jeff King's come back into the mix. I don't even know who I'm missing. The rest of them who I'm missing. Newbie. So as an owner, I sit there and go, okay, we got 96 points last year with a lesser team. Of course we need to break the 100-point mark. So for me, it wasn't so much about, you know, bringing in a tactical genius or anything like that. It was, which, don't get me wrong, I think tactically, you know, we are good. There's some areas I think that we can improve. But it was more about bringing in someone that would allow the group of players to play and play the way that this football club wants to play. And for that, he's done a fantastic job.
Because that was my next question. That around that time, you kind of, I think you responded to someone's tweet about, well, you just got 96 points and you said, I want more. And I wondered whether that was part of your kind of social media bravado, or is that kind of, you genuinely believe that you knew adding these players you could feasibly get above 100?
I wanted the record this season. I generally sat there at the beginning of the year and thought we're going to get the record. I think, and again, I'm not trying to bash or put anyone down here. Do I look back and think maybe if Stuart had been here from pre-season, do we have that record? Yeah, I probably think we do. I think we also would have won the league a few games earlier. But do we get the moment? Do we get the moment at Rochdale that will live on in all of our memories forever and ever, and the football club's memories forever and ever? No. So do things happen for a reason? I guess so.
Yeah, I genuinely believe that. And we talked on a fans podcast last night saying that the Barnsley game felt like a seminal moment where the sort of Stones-Pierce partnership properly formed. But it was also when the team started to go through the gears. I know they lost at Barnsley, but that game for me felt like a bit of a pendulum sort of swing. Was there a particular game for you where you felt like that was a key moment in the season?
Yeah, I think that's a fair game to point out. I think it's, like we spoke about earlier, I think it was crucial to get Josh involved. I think we had a soft underbelly last year, and I think everyone knows Josh Stones is the complete opposite of a soft underbelly. So, and also just to have an outlet up the pitch. So for me, him coming in was the most important moment in the season. I also would like to think that another really, really important moment, which probably goes under the radar a little bit, was when Malachi got injured and we moved quickly to bring in Morgan. I think the job Morgan did when he came in was phenomenal. And, you know, it's not, again, it's more of the dirty work, but do we win the title without Morgan? I don't think so. I think also Zach Johnson has been phenomenal. But I think if you look at the games where Jack Johnson, good artist, good singer, but Zach Johnson was playing on the right side of the defence, he wasn't as effective or it wasn't his strengths. The moment that Morgan had come in and Zach moved back to the middle, I think there was a click there. I think if you look at the stats, like the gate where you had Morgan, Zach and Kitch as your back three, and also, sorry, Kingy and Brooksy coming in, I think we went on a, I don't know what it is, I don't want to misspeak, but at least a 5-6-7 game run of winning and not really conceding. I think the big problem for us this season, which we'll have to address in the summer, is you know, set pieces. That's how we conceded a lot of goals this season. But I think that Morgan deserves massive credit for coming in and you know, you lose a player of Malachi's calibre, who's, you know, for me is probably one of, if not the best defenders at the level. And it was seamless almost. I think Morgan came in and and I knew Morgan obviously from my time at Yeovil, but he was fantastic. So I think he needs a lot of credit for coming in and in a title race and slipping into a new team and doing what was asked of him, because it was phenomenal.
Yeah, and I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that you're very big on sort of history and remembering everything about your sort of journey, the journey that you're on at York City. So from that, and that's from like thanking Mikey Morton for his time at the club, welcoming Dippo back for a game. So what's going to be your overriding memory of this season? What are the moments do you think are going to live long in your memory from this part of the journey?
I don't know. Do you know what it is with, you know, the two things you said there with Dippo and Mikey? Is I do think that sort of hard times form strong bonds. I feel like I let Mikey down a lot and it plays on my mind quite a bit. I think I came in and we filled the squad full of shit basically, and unfortunately he took the brunt of it. I do think, what would Mikey look like with this team under his belt? Because he was, you know, he is a phenomenal football mind. So it was special to you because it's the first time that you've got a manager, and unfortunately you have to fire him. And I feel like I let him down, and my bond with him will, and the way he's handled it since. Like, there's been a lot of people that have left this club, and you know, the dickheads. They don't want to acknowledge anything like that, their mistakes or anything like that. But Mikey, for me, is someone that's always, you know, he still calls me boss and things like that. And when I see him, he's nothing but complimentary. He sends me lovely messages and, you know, it's reciprocated both ways. So I just got a lot of time for him. And I always feel like I let him down a little bit. And there's a part of me that someday would love to give him the chance to come back and, you know, do it again. Dippo the same. Dippo came in, and Dippo, I think between him and Marvin, probably saved us, and we wouldn't be where we are now if it wasn't for them. So I really, really am happy about this season. And so happy with how it's ended, and we'll never forget it. But that first year, there's just something special about it to me. I don't think any year will ever top it in terms of how much it meant to me. Obviously, we're sitting here with the trophy sat in front of us and as champions, and it means a hell of a lot. But I do feel like you learn more and you feel more during the hard times than you do during the good times. So I don't really have a memory of this season that comes to mind. I've loved this season. It's been so much fun to watch. You know, I've got such a soft spot for those people, and you know, boys like Callum Howe and Fallowfield and Dan Batty, who have been here since I've got here, and it's like almost you've been through the fire together, and now we're set. Like, it was almost poetic the other day that it was sort of the three players that one was. So Fallowfield gets the cross in. Who, I'm not going to lie to you, when I first got here, I thought he was rubbish. I thought he was terrible. I've told him that loads of times. And he grew on me and grew on me and grew on me. And I've got, you know, he's just signed a new extension, so he'll be here next year. So yeah, so from him going over to Cal, who's been such a fantastic leader and legend for this football club during a very turbulent time, to head it back across. And then the boy that they all writ off, and the boy that, you know, I'd got a lot of stick for and saying he doesn't fit our system, doesn't fit York, blah, 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 to be the one to score. Again, I don't know the history as well as you guys, but I can't imagine a more important goal in this football club's history. It just felt like, that was just a big moment and a proud moment for me.
Yeah, and a vindication as well. I thought your message to Rochdale after the game was very classy and sort of credit their part in what has been an unbelievable title race. So
you might be the first person to have ever called me classy.
How likely do you think it is that York City's legacy from this season might actually force change with the free up? I feel like there's been so many more eyeballs on the structure of the league. I think almost like people in the wider football world have not realised that, like, how kind of unfair the system is.
So firstly on Rochdale, I think what they've done this season is beyond incredible. I think that the manager, Jim McNulty, the job he's done there is, you know, I think him and the two managers that I've been most impressed by this season have been him and Rob Elliott at Gateshead. Because, and this is no disrespect to Rochdale or their players or anything, but I think if you look at our team and you look at their team in terms of just personnel, there's a lot more talent, I think, in our team. So for them to go toe to toe right until the end with us, it's a credit to the players. It's a credit But it's also just a massive credit to their manager. Like, what a performance he's put in. It must be gutting for him what's happened. I don't know how you pick yourself up after that. But he and all of them can hold their heads high, because if you asked at the beginning of the season, we were favourites to win the league. I think Carlisle might have been right up there with us. But what Rochdale have done with, you know, less resource, I'll be forever impressed by this season from them. I do. You know, I love Southend. I've got a real soft spot for them. But for sporting reasons, I do hope that Rochdale can get it done. In terms of the legacy of three up, you know, they've got another voter now in the EFL in us that will 100% support that. But, you know, there's an argument to be made that that final day isn't possible with three up. So I don't know how they look at that. I also think, maybe does Rochdale have to be the sacrificial lamb here for it to work? I think we had it before with Wrexham and Notts County. And because Notts County went up in the playoffs, that, you know, kind of got swept under the rug a little bit. And I don't want this to happen. I'm putting it 100% on the record. But I think for there to be quick and serious change, I think that Rochdale will have to fail. And then you look at it and go, a team that, you know, was, what, 30 seconds from winning the division and was so much better than the team that came in third, haven't gone up. And it would be a you know, a travesty for sure. So I think that's my view on that. I support it, and I think that there's no difference between League Two and the top half of the National League anymore. I think you see that with Barnet and Oldham and Chesterfield and all the teams that have gone up. But I think there needs, you know, for it, like in any moment in history, there has to be a, you know, almost a turning point, and maybe Rochdale not going up would be that turning point.
Yeah, and I think one thing that's become clear and clear every time we've met is that you do have a clear identity for what you want the football side of a club to be like. You know, like you mentioned earlier, a DNA. So over 100 points and over 100 goals, that again must give you such satisfaction to look back on, to think that that epitomises what you actually set out to achieve.
Yeah, 100%. I'm proud of it. But I think I'm always striving to be better and get better. And I think I probably focus on the negatives more than the positives. Like I already knew we were going to score a lot of goals. We've got the players to do it. Again, like I said earlier, 96 points last year, you add all those superstars to this team, you're going to have a very good shot at 100 points. I think I look at it and I go, okay, where can we improve? And, you know, I think we ranked in terms of expected goals against bottom for set pieces. For me, is that sickening. That's not good enough. That has to improve. So I always think I'm looking at how can we get better, how can we improve, what's the next step? And yeah, you take moments like Saturday and you take it in, and it's great, but it's a never-ending game. It restarts again in August, and we, you know, we're going into a more physical league, and we better have that sorted out.
Yeah. And the future, how far can this club go? You've always been quite coy with me, I think, about ambitions, but it just feel like this is just a start for York City getting back in the Football League. So do you look at the likes of Lincoln City, who are a club with a similar historical level of club that York are? They've just got into the Championship. Do you look at that and think, well, why not? Why can't we emulate their sort of achievements?
I do a little bit, but I think we're different. I think the teams like Lincoln, your Bromleys, I think there's a formula to it where if you can really dominate set pieces, be really physical and just run your socks off, you can, with lesser players, achieve more. And I think there's no knock to either club. I think what they've both done is unbelievable. But what I want us to do is I want us to do it in sort of style. I don't know if anyone's done that yet. I think Notts County have tried, but they've sort of stuck. They've been stuck in League Two for a while now. So, yeah, I'd like us to be a club that has an identity of, you know, a free-flowing and scoring team, attacking team, and not relinquish those principles and be, I would say, listen, there might be another team that's done it and I don't know about it, but for me, be, you know, the first team that did it our way and almost trailblazed, if that makes sense.
It does. And for supporters, obviously, the season's ended, and we forget about football a little bit until pre-season comes along. But I suppose this is a time that's quite busy for you, isn't it? You're starting to finalise plans and dealing with contracts and stuff like that. What's your sort of timeline now going forward?
Well, we've obviously got the trip to Ibiza with the players, which will be fun. And then I think I'm going to go try and get away for like 10 days just to reset a little bit. But yeah, you're right, this is probably the busiest time of our year for the non-playing staff. Obviously we've got to meet our compliance for the level above and sort the academy out and things like that, but on top of that we need to do a full review of the season and understand what we did well, what we didn't do so well, where can we improve. I think that will be pretty straightforward, to be honest with you. Then there's the really, really, you know, the terrible part of this industry and job, where, you know, the players that are maybe not getting a new contract have to be told, which that's a heartbreaking one. And then, you know, there needs to be some new additions, whether that be players or maybe some backroom staff who might specialise in different areas. We'll see. But yeah, I think I've always tried, I say always, it's been 2 years, 3 years, but talking like I've done it for 75 years.
Probably feels like 75 years.
I like to get all our business sort of finalised before the boys come back for pre-season. On the transfer front anyways, I know last season there was the manager situation was... it was what it was. But yeah, ideally you get all your business done and you're raring to go, and it's going to be a new experience for me again, because, you know, we've got actual windows that we need to observe and we've got new cups that we're entering, and, you know, there's a lot to take in and plan for, because, you know, do we take certain cups seriously and other ones maybe not so seriously? What type of squad do we need to compete on all fronts? So yeah, it's an interesting time for sure, and it's fun, but yeah, stressful. I just need a quick break before we do it all again.
Yeah, because it's exhausting, the season, isn't it? I mean, we found that as supporters. We were saying, weren't we, that me and Steve, that you do get drained from it, and you're not playing. You're just going along as a fan. But even the 90 minutes at Rochdale, 90 plus whatever, it takes a lot out of you, doesn't it, watching it? And it's all consuming, isn't it, football?
Yeah, I think the summer's... there's more work to be done in the summer in terms of recruitment and everything like that. But it is more of a... especially, I think, this summer will be more of a stress-free period. You're not waiting for results and... looking at, you know, having to tune into Rochdale Southend on a Tuesday night, hoping for, you know, Southend to do us a favour. I think, yeah, we've got the World Cup, that'll be fun. So yeah, it's probably more work, but less stress, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you touched upon this already, but, you know, football is quite a ruthless business, isn't it? So it must be difficult for you to have these conversations with players that might not be on that next part of the journey, because they've helped you achieve what you set out to do, which was to get us promoted. So that must be a real... and you mentioned there about Mikey Moore and you have some sort of regrets with that. It must be a really difficult time for you as well to sort of think about who is coming with us, who isn't.
Yeah, I think especially this group this year, it's a real difficult one. I think there's been some twats in the past, so you're just like, yeah, whatever, I'm glad you're gone. But there's not a single bad egg in the camp, so it will be tough, and I hope it isn't taken personally and they can understand. I think hopefully we've likewise left them as champions, and other teams, their stock will be high. I don't fear that any of them will not get a club at least National League level. But yeah, it's tough, because you'd form bonds over the space of, you know, it could be 3 years, could have been two, or it could just be one season. But you do form bonds, and, you know, some people take it rough and they don't want that bond anymore, and, you know, it's a lesson that you just have to learn. And ultimately my goal is, and my allegiances are to York City, and I got to do what I believe is right for the football club, whether that be with players or staff or whoever. I'm going to make decisions that are going to be unpopular, but I just am never going to stray away from what I believe in and my vision and my processes. I'm just not going to, and people might not like me for that, and that's okay. And I think the first year I really wanted to be liked, and at this point I really, you know, I love the fans, but I know that I'm only a couple of results away from them not liking me for something. So it's better that I stick to what I believe is going to give me long-term success and the football club long-term success. And yeah, I just, you know, again, another year of learning, and next year will be, I'm sure, a big learning curve too, because I feel like I've got to the point where I know a lot about the National League, and it's new territory for us. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a good journey, and I'm excited for it.
And the recruitment, you never sit still. You know, as long as I've kind of known you, that you're always kind of looking ahead and looking at what comes next. So you'll have targets in mind, I'm sure, about kind of next season. So is that difficult because you didn't quite know what division we were going to be in for definite, or was that irrelevant? Because obviously someone like Ollie Banks, I think you would have probably signed him if he got promoted last year.
I think there's, you know, players that we're looking at that you probably would have gone and got them in both divisions. They might be younger players that you think, if we're in this division, they'll come in and they'll do a great job straight off. If we go up, you don't mind if they don't hit the ground running. You're happy having them around. And like I said, you're fighting on multiple fronts. You got the Carabao Cup, the, is it Virtu or whatever it's called? Johnson's Payne Trophy to me. You know, you've got that, the FA Cup, the league. Plus, I think with, you know, our academy, we're going to have, you know, high standard of game. So yeah, there's those type of players. Then there are other ones where you go, okay, if I'm in the National League, I'm signing him 100%. If I'm in League Two, do I think I can get better? Yeah, probably. So those type of ones you couldn't really move on until we knew our fate. Now we know our fate, it plays massively into our hands as well, and that we're an EFL club. We don't have to pay the premium for players to drop out of the league anymore. And I think, I might be biased, but I think that this is one of the clubs with the football we play and the direction that we're going in that a lot of players want to come and be a part of. So there's no shortage of players. It's just making the right choices on the ones that complement us. And I'll say it straight away, is there's not going to be wholesale changes. We have an unbelievable team already. There'll be little tweaks, but this squad is unbelievable. We could not touch it and it would do an absolutely great job in League Two. But great's not good enough for me. I want to win.
Do you have a number in mind then of the sort of players you'd want? Because like you mentioned there, the competitions, I feel like you've operated on a relatively small squad this season. It's, you know, there's only one or two that don't make the match day squad, and it's pretty much been that same group all year, hasn't it? But
yeah,
next season, would you be looking to,
I think,
is it season, quality or quantity sort of thing, you know?
No, I think it's never quantity. It's always got to be quality. There's got to be some sort of reason for you signing them, never just to fill out the numbers. I think that you just put, if that's what you're going to do, you might as well put an academy kid on and then get them some minutes. I think what we have to be careful of now is in the National League, it's, you can react to things because the window's open till the end of March. So Malachi going down, for example, you know, you can go out and get Morgan quickly and you're good to go. I think we have to be more prepared to plan for different types of situations that don't derail our season. So, you know, I think, like, I look at it now and go, okay, left side of centre back, we've got Kitch. Don't really have anyone else to go play there if he's to go down. That needs to be addressed, you know, and I'm not going to go through it position by position, but that's just an example of that.
Yeah.
So I just think, yeah, that's the difference is for me. And like I said, it's going to be my first year in League Two, so I'm sure I'll make a few mistakes and learn from them. But yeah, I'm content on what we have lined up and what we have in the building already.
And what about retention? Because that's important as well, isn't it? Because I know this season you've obviously tied likes of Hunt down, Pierce, Felix to longer term deals. You mentioned there, Ryan Fallowfield's got an extension. So is it important to you to keep the core of them together? Because sort of those players and Josh in particular, he's got the best years of his career ahead of him, hasn't he? And you'll want to make sure those are with York City if you can.
Yeah, Josh already has quite a decent length deal. My view on Josh is I would like to tie him down to a new deal, a long-term one where we have got his best years. I think that's what Josh wants too. It's just, you know, working out numbers, right? They'll want one thing, we'll want another, and hopefully we can meet in the middle somewhere. But listen, Josh has time enough that we, you know, it's not an urgent matter that needs to be addressed. I'd like to address it because I think Josh has done well and deserves a new deal, but he's not going anywhere. Like, it's just not going to happen.
He might be going at Weatherspoons, maybe.
I think, you know, I don't know a single player here that has come to me and wants to leave this football club. They all love it here. They all can see what we're trying to do. They can all see the improvements that have been, especially the ones that have been here a while. They can see, like, from when we come in to where we are now, they can see that we're moving it. We're trending upwards. And yeah, I maybe I'm naive, but I don't believe any of them want to go anywhere.
Because the better you become as well, and the sort of season that these players have had sort of collectively and individually, that there will be other people sniffing about. Word, I didn't know if you had any bids for players during the season, and how difficult that sort of makes it.
100% we get offered, you know, we get people sniffing around and interested in our players all the time. The key thing for us is none of them are in their last year of the contract, so it doesn't, we're not forced to do anything. We'll try and get things sorted this year. If a player is coming into his last year, do we cash in? Probably, yeah. I think financially it makes a lot of sense. But do I believe in our recruitment that we would be able to replace that player? Yeah, I do. I really do. I think I think Malachi's an absolutely phenomenal defender. But if he was, if we were to get a silly offer for him, are there players that we could go out and get that could, you know, soften that blow? Well, I think Morgan went out and proved that already. We did, and that was, you know, we could go do that at a different level as well. Josh is an interesting one. Josh is very unique as a player. I have lists, and you know, there's in every position I would feel pretty comfortable that we could replace. He's the one I just feel is, and I'm probably screwing myself in contract negotiations here, but he's the one I just feel is, he's almost like the last of a dying breed. Is he's special. He's very, very special, and I love him, and I hope he doesn't listen to this and thinks he can get a few extra quid out of us, because he can't. But yeah, he's the conundrum. The Stones conundrum is always there. I'm thinking, well, where's the like for like here? Because it's difficult to find.
Yeah, and I just wanted to go a slightly sort of different direction here. I mentioned about your mum. Mm. I vaguely remember, it might have even been you saying to me a few years ago, oh, she's not really interested in football. Don't ever ask her about tactics or anything like that.
Yeah.
But she's definitely caught the bug, hasn't she? I mean, I she was sort of just down to the right of me at Rochdale, and she was kicking every single ball on Saturday. And I wondered whether, has that sort of surprised you? Because you're obviously a very close family, but has that shared interest sort of brought you closer together?
I think us working together, listen, we've always been really close, but I think working together has improved. I don't even think it needed improving, but we have got closer because we, you know, I have to talk 4, 5, 6 times a day about things to do with football, which is, you know, I never thought I'd be doing that with her. But she loves this football club. Like, she absolutely loves it. And I think we're a great team, to be honest with you. I think I do a lot of the, you know, the football side of things and maybe engaging with fans. And I think what she does maybe goes a little bit more unnoticed, but this football club would be, I couldn't do it. Like, I just couldn't. So yeah, she's been phenomenal, and she's, you know, she's a very wealthy woman that doesn't need to be dealing with drink prices or dealing with the SMC or whatever it is. But she does it because she's fallen in love with this football club, just as I have. And I still don't think she knows much about tactics, to be honest with you. But she's a fan of York, just like all my friends are fans of York. My family are all massive York fans and watch the games. And, you know, even my friends and family out in Canada, they all were so excited on Saturday. So I think football brings everyone together. It's cool that for me and my friends and for my family, as we're all growing up as different fans. Like, I'm an Arsenal fan. I've got Spurs friends who are Spurs fans, friends, you know, Man United, Liverpool's, all them. But it's cool to, you know, all be in one place and all wanting the same thing. So yeah, no, she's caught the bug, and so have a lot of other people that probably didn't think they'd be tuning into, you know, Rochdale South End on a Tuesday night in February.
And the support, I think over 4,000 season ticket sales already for next season, which 5 or 6 years ago that would have been absolutely unheard of. So it's a real shame about the news about the parade maybe not happening this week, but you must be delighted with the way that you've got the buy-in now from the supporters, and that everyone is coming on this journey with you, aren't there? And it's some atmosphere, isn't it, down here when everyone is packed into the ground?
Yeah, of course it's fantastic, but I think the reason that happens, I think you've got your core set of fans, like the two of you, who, it doesn't matter what happens here, you're going to be here. But I think the DNA that we've brought to this club of wanting to play really, really attractive football and score lots of goals and be entertaining, it kind of brings people in the door. It's the product on the pitch has to be good. Otherwise, why would you come and watch a bunch of people just hoof a ball for 90 minutes and maybe you see one goal? I also think that York fans, and I probably me myself, have, and it's probably, actually I blame myself probably for most of it, is I do feel we've created a villain sort of story here, that I think it's almost York against the world.
Siege mentality sort of thing.
Yeah, we're not well liked by the outside world, I don't think, from my view. I think there's certain clubs that do like us for whatever reason, but there's a lot of clubs that historically, I think probably before I got here, didn't really care about York. And then I think it's great. I love it. I love that we're all like, you know, come on then, we're a bigger football club than you. We're going to be better than you. There's an arrogance now to York fans that I didn't see at the beginning. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I like it. I think believe, dream, because I tell you what, this is just the start. So talk your shit all you want, because we're going to back it up. It might not be this year, but we're going to back it up. And this is a club on the rise. And, you know, people can be jealous of this football club. People can hate this football club. But ultimately, we don't really care. because we're all in it together.
And last question, with that rise and the sort of, like I mentioned, the 4,000 season ticket holders, you know, and imagine if you have another good season in League Two playing the football you're playing, that'll rise again. At what point do you try to get a bigger boat? I know you've said this year about, you know, the sooner we get our own ground, the better. What, it is a realistic sort of dilemma, isn't it? Because this place might not be big enough for what you actually want your ambitions to be.
It's not big enough for my ambitions, no. Do we have plans of what we could do for it? There's a few different options, yeah. I think we have to cross that bridge when we get there, see what it looks like next year. I think we're going to be close next year. We're not going to have 10 away fans come in. It's going to be, I think every club's going to, you know, bring a hell of a lot. So yeah, it's a good problem to have for sure. There's different solutions and different ways that you can cut it. Ideally, we own this place and expand it. But you know, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to deal with certain people, and maybe we have to move. I don't know. That's not something that's like on the, you know, very high up on the agenda right now. But yeah, I think for my ambitions and for this football club's ambitions, the stadium's too small. It will be too small. It's not too small right now, it's fine, but it will become too small if we get to where we want to be.
Matt, every time I speak to you, I go away feeling more and more positive about the football club, and I think people who listen to it, the response is always the same, and this will be absolutely no different. I wish you the best of luck in the summer. Hope you can rest and get some good sleep before it all sort of starts up again. But thank you once again for giving up your time.
No, I really appreciate it. Again, we'll run it back next year and see where we're at. Hopefully champions again, and we'll have another trophy in front of us.
Can't wait to see it. So huge, huge thank you again to Matt for giving up his time to speak to York Hospital Radio. It's always a pleasure to have him on, and you know, the fact we interviewed him right at the start, and we've been doing one every year since, it's always a real nice sort of yardstick to see where things have gone in the previous year and kind of looking ahead to the next season, and today was no different. Did mention at the start that there is a signed shirt that I've got from Mark Kitchen due to my uncle sponsoring his shirt this season, so it's the third kit. If people want to own it, we're going to do a little prize draw, a little bit like we did for the Deep Park and Yemi episode. So please just donate to York Hospital Radio. It's justgiving.com/York Hospital Radio. Even if you're just donating £1, just make sure you put your name on it. We'll kind of keep that live for the whole of the month of May, and then we'll draw at the end of that, and then I will hand it to someone in person at one of the pre-season games. So all proceeds would go to York Hospital Radio. We raise a lot of money doing a similar thing for Deepak and Yemi's shirt from the previous season, so please spread the word. Like I say, there's no catch with it. If you donate £1 and put your name on it, you'll go into the draw. Other ways you can help York Hospital Radio: please follow and subscribe York Hospital Ball. Same with the crux of it. These things, as well as kind of reviews and ratings, they all help the algorithms and kind of spread the word. That's kind of what we're all about now. It's just, you know, we've been going for a long, long time now, Hospital Ball. I think it's our seventh year. We just want to keep growing the podcast for York City supporters. So every series I do, there's always one or two people that haven't discovered it yet. So you doing those things and kind of word of mouth and that sort of thing really, really helps us as a charity. And finally, speaking of new series, I am trying desperately to kind of put some stuff together. I've got one episode recorded. I've got another two contacts I need to chase up. It's just been a little bit of a chaotic end to the season, and I've probably ended up doing kind of other media commitments here and there, and that's kind of pushed things back a little bit. So God damn York City for being so good at the end of this season. So that's kind of what's scuppered it. But I will get some stuff out there in the summer. I know that people like having some content to listen to when we're waiting for pre-season to kind of come around. So I'll do my best to kind of get those sort of things out there. So yeah, if you subscribe, then it's the easiest way to sort of find out when episodes have dropped. So yeah, thanks again to Matt. I don't think you can be anything other than massively excited by what you heard on this interview, and I'm really looking forward already to the next interview that we do and hear the kind of progress that's been made. So till the next time, thank you very much.